Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Paola Arbour. Paola is the Chief Information Officer of Tenet Healthcare, a multinational healthcare services company based in Dallas with 110,000 employees operating 65 hospitals and 475 outpatient centers with $18 billion in annual revenue. In her role as CIO, Paola leads IT strategy and service for the Tenet Healthcare enterprise, driving service innovation and evolution and quality delivery. Paola's 30 years of experience in IT operations include her previous role as president of the ServiceNow business unit of Provi International. Prior to her time at ServiceNow, Paola led technical and engineering teams at Dell Services and Electronic Data Systems. In this interview, Paola describes the process of transforming Tenet's IT organization from a cost focus to an investment-minded organization. The transformation centered around four imperatives: enhancing the voice of the customer, changing the language of IT, building an innovation culture, and focusing on talent. Paola highlights the importance of transparency, communication, and collaboration among teams to successfully lead an organizational change of great scale. We also discuss Paola's prior experiences serving CIOs, the need for greater mentorship for women in technology, artificial intelligence, data analytics, and a variety of other topics. Paola Arbour, welcome to Technovation. It's so great to speak with you today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. Paola, you have been in your role as CIO of Tenet Health for about a year now. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could take a moment and describe the organization that you found a year ago and some of the things that you pursued in the weeks and months after starting that has led to the change taking you to the current period.
You got it. I can't believe it's been a year. As I sit here and I reflect, and I said that we have agile training going on down the hall. I'll start with that. We wouldn't have done that a year ago. We wouldn't have had a team that would have potentially been interested in that, and it wouldn't have been a thought for us to actually consider ourselves into an agility mindset. So a year ago, I found what I thought was a typical bespoke IT organization, very cost-focused, very keep-the-lights-on-focused, not necessarily a seat at the table, if I can say, probably much more as a cost center and less as an investment opportunity. And I hate talking like this to some degree because I don't want it to sound like it was all bad and then it became all good. I think it was an inflection point. We had a new CEO. The CEO was making some pretty dramatic changes in the leadership team, took IT and information systems, is what we call ourselves, and moved it to an ELT leadership position and made sure that the CIO did have a seat at the table, that technology was not an afterthought, was not a vertical, but it was an enabler for all of our business strategies. And that became incredibly pronounced. And making sure that the team that was part of that movement was enabled and invested in, and that there was a distinct correlation between the success of our customers, and I use air quotes with our customers. Our customers are the people who take care of our patients every single day. So as you're aware with Tenet, of course, we're acute care. We're also ambulatory, and we manage revenue cycle. So you put all those pieces together, we serve a pretty healthy population of people, and they are our patients. So the role that physicians and clinicians play is serving those patients. And then the way we looked at it from a technology standpoint is, what is it we're going to do to help them be successful in delivering care? And that's really how it started. So it was a simple thought process, if you will. And then we embarked on I call it Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Everybody upstairs will tell you this has been Mr. Toad's Wild Ride in a year. But it was really focusing on four key imperatives that we actually took to the board and wrapped an entire transformation program around. First and foremost, and you'll hear me iterate this all day long, was voice of the customer. So one thing that I think was missing is there wasn't a stakeholder management. And so we put a huge program in place that we launched immediately around voice of the customer. And then I hit the road and went out to about 50 some odd of our hospitals, our acute care hospitals. And we have over 60. So, and I did that and tried to do that in about 3-4 months to get through there and make sure that what we were doing is listening to the customer. So that was the big program. The second thing, that imperative that we put in place that I think was a not only a culture change for the team, but a language change. And that was, I didn't want to talk about cost. I didn't want to talk about cost reduction, and I didn't want to talk about budgets. To me, budgets were synonymous with entitlement. You get a budget and you spend it. And then you get another budget and you spend it. And what I wanted to do is reshape our thinking into efficiency and investment. So what do we do with the funds that we have? Instead of just spending them, how do we actually minimize that through efficiency and productivity and then further invest in what we do to continue to drive voice of the customer and deliverables against our customers' expectations. The third thing we did is we actually built an innovation culture. That was not something we had at all because we were too busy keeping the lights on and too busy managing a budget. There wasn't any time to think out of the box or even reward or recognize people for thought leadership. And so we built the whole phenomenon kind of ground up around innovation. We built a sandbox. We began partnering with external partners much more heavily. Some partners even saying, wow, we've never actually had an opportunity to talk with you guys before. So this is pretty cool. So we built that. And then obviously because of those three trajectories, our fourth imperative was focusing on our talent. And so, you know, come full circle to a year later, 75% of the leadership team is new. It's a completely different operating model. We're very flat. So we've moved into a very flat organizational structure and we're very functional. And in that period, we've integrated our other businesses. So Tenet as a business is three main lines of business. It's the United Surgical Partners, our USPI business, which is ambulatory, Conifer, which is our revenue cycle, and then, of course, acute care legacy Tenet. For IT, we brought all three of those pieces together. So I have a CIO for USPI. I have a CIO for Conifer, and we invested in, and I'll use the word self-funded, in CIOs for our regional markets where our acute care hospitals are so they can be closer. We have IT closer to the customer that operates within the market and then basically supports all of the technology deliverables into the market and then acts as an advocate for the market back into corporate, if you will, mm-hmm. IS. I guess in a nutshell, that's where I see where we started, and now we're operating on those cylinders today, a year later.
That's excellent.
And yeah, so right. It's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, wow, what an extraordinary amount of change in a fairly short amount of time. I wanted to follow up with you on the voice of the customer. As mm-hmm. you went about these visits to the 60 different centers around the country and went on your listening tour, what did you find? Did you find that your customers were particularly tech savvy? Did they have their own ideas of what change should look like? Were they sort of giving you symptoms that you had to find the cure for? Tell me a bit more about those conversations and then the fruit of that, what you focus the attention of the team on based on those conversations.
So that's a fabulous question. I'm really happy that you're thinking in that way. That makes me really excited. I found a population of customers that felt very underserved and disconnected. And it was, we would hold forums with our physicians and we'd hold forums with nurses. And we would do what the clinical providers call rounding. And we would actually go to the floors, so not expect them to come to us, but we would go to the floors in the hospitals and we would real time engage with nurses and physicians while they were doing their jobs. And we, the questions would be, what is it that technology is doing that is impeding your ability to deliver care? And what is it that technology is doing that you actually like or helping? I must admit the list on the like part was a little bit thin and it's grown, which is great, but it was much more helpful to hear about what we were doing that was impeding them because they'd not been asked that before. So really net, it was security is a problem for them. We've made access difficult. And because technology has changed so dramatically and unfortunately in healthcare hasn't kept up. And so as healthcare and providers within healthcare know more and more about technology to do their jobs, robotics is a really great point. Technology in healthcare hasn't kept up in order to support them to be able to do their jobs. So it was really good to be able to sit there and listen to those roadblocks, if you will, where our processes and our technology from an IT standpoint need a significant facelift in order to keep up with what providers are using in order to do the work that they do. And a huge impetus upon that was security. So remember, in healthcare, it's very risk averse for all the right reasons, but the world's changed and the world has moved. So instead of the IT team saying no, which is historically what they were feeling rebuffed about, is the answer was always no because of security, we've had to put in, through our thought leadership and connectivity within the industry, some very different aspects of technology in order to enable them to do what they need to do and remove the barriers of security, but still keeping in check with what we're responsible for because of our patient data. And if you actually look outside the doors of your company, there are partners, there are companies out there that do all the right things. We just need to be technologists and be able to put those pieces together to make them work for our providers. So that was the biggest thing, biggest piece of feedback we heard outside of the fact nobody's actually ever asked me my opinion before. So they were delighted about that. So I kind of look at that whole security aspect as access, accessibility into helping them do their jobs. And then obviously, which, you know, I think is pretty predominant in IT overall is speed. So the speed with which we actually deliver to their requirements and to their requests. And so we focused on speed. We focused on the technology evolution around security, I'll say. And then from voice of the customer standpoint, because we ran truly legitimate forums. We invited them and we rounded with them. And we took notes. We collected almost 5,000 discrete pieces of feedback. And the fact that we called them our customers was very, very well received. And then we put in a process in place, which started with single points of contact and gave them a person, an actual human being to talk to, not a service desk. We're actually putting portal capability in today, but we didn't start with that. So we gave them true one-on-one interaction with people that are clinical and technology to be able for them to provide the feedback that they wanted to, the requests that they needed. In some cases, and I'll openly say this, I mean, in some cases, we were 2 years behind in responding to their needs and their requirements. And so that's, I mean, those are the things that, believe me, we heard a lot. And they were not shy, which was great.
Well, it sounds great, and I'm sure that was those were energizing conversations. I'm thinking to myself, you're generating a tremendous amount of demand, and it's you began with the listening tour. You talked about the 75% of, was it leadership that was
yes.
replaced? So considerable people changes necessary in order to create a new culture, bring in new skills, et cetera. But presumably during that change, there's actually speed probably was hindered for a time as people are coming up to speed and so on. How did you set expectations as you were drawing demand from them as to what you would tackle first and what might have to wait and what necessarily had to wait until you had the right people in place to be able to deliver what they were talking about?
And to your point, it's setting the right expectations. And I think it was giving the team internally within our IS organization an opportunity and empower them to be honest with the customers and to have a continued dialogue. So while this process was ongoing, I was also in the process of hiring our permanent, what we call client delivery leaders, which we'd not had before. So that wasn't, to your point, that's not an overnight sensation. And that took time. I actually just employed my last client delivery leader a month ago.
Oh, wow.
So it has been a pretty laborious process. Somebody who is clinical, technical, customer facing, and understands a backdrop of financials. You know, it's just,
they're not dime a dozen.
They're not, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're tough people to find. But to your point, I think the first wave was, we're just happy you listened. And I'll admit this, expectations were low. And they had heard a lot of feedback from the company before about what was going to happen, and then sometimes what was going to happen didn't happen for the providers because priorities changed, people changed, what have you. So the diligence that we put in place was really about ongoing dialogue and communication. And then, again, I think the biggest step forward was when we did a quick set of analytics around the feedback. Make no mistake, 80% of that feedback was very clinical in nature. So we quickly parsed out that which we could do on our own very quickly and that which would require something significant in the system. So we constantly were feeding that which we could do very quickly and put a very quick, this is all manual, you know, kind of a little bit dirty, certainly not perfect process in place to get workflow changes, a little bit more education, that type of stuff. Even just analytical reporting, things that would help them a little bit more. The big stuff, we actually then embarked on a re-solutioning of the electronic health record. And that electronic health record culminated into a brand new system in partnership with Cerner. We've already been very public with that. We did a pretty significant step forward in our new electronic health record for all of our hospitals, as well as some of our ambulatory facilities. And then we did that deal and then announced that to our providers and our clinicians. And they were, you know, kind of, okay, wow, I guess they're serious. They're really going to do this. So we earned some credibility. So I guess I would say listening to her, love that. Continuous loop of feedback mechanism. Here's what's in the works. Here's what's not. Being open, honest, transparent, and then get some street cred and earn some credibility by actually delivering what we said we were going to do. And the Cerner deal helped significantly. And we're executing.
That's really great. And you became an engine for innovation, as you talked about.
Correct.
And as you think about changing the culture from, as you pointed out, more of a traditional IT department, let's say, more of a order-taking IT yeah. department, as opposed to one driving new ideas, educating the rest of the organization on the art of the possible. Part of that, of course, is bringing in new leadership who are oriented a bit of a different way. But of course, I'm sure the vast majority of people through the organization are people that predate your time with the company as well. How have you inculcated the rest of the organization to be oriented towards a different way of formulating value or thinking about how value is created through IT?
I wish I had a really perfect answer for you on that one. There are days that I think I'm doing it right, and then there are days where, gosh, I wish I had thought of a different way to go do this. Some of it, it really has been trial and error. But I guess I'll say, and I'll use my previous career, because that's honestly, that's how I looked at this, and that's how I went into this. First of all, center around what's important and forget about the stuff that's not. And I made sure that that resonated with the team. Here are the four things that are important, and everything else doesn't matter. Not right now. I hope people would support this. I think they would. A 100% aura of transparency. We're all in this together. I have a name that is, you know, and a responsibility to the company as a chief information officer. But I'm right there with you, and I'm rounding with you. I'm talking to customers with you. I'm hugging you. I'm praising you. I'm telling you when we can do things better. Again, just 100% transparency. We want the feedback from our customers, which means you want the feedback from your customers, which means you want the feedback from me, and I want the feedback from you. So that whole feedback loop was an imperative, and I think you earn trust that way. It was hard. People were scared. They'll tell you. I mean, it was nerve-wracking when you see people who have been with the company for a long time and they're not here, and things are changing, and all of a sudden there's, you know, 15 new people from outside the company coming in. That's overwhelming. I mean, I know that. In addition, we brought in a lot of external consultancy. And again, we were trying to do a significant paradigm shift in a very short period of time. And I wanted people to understand what I was signing up for. And if I signed up for it, that meant they needed to sign up for it. And everybody has a choice. And, you know, but in return, I wanted to make sure that I was giving back to the team. Not only through open dialogue and communication and the ability to vent and voice and ask and do, but also the enablement for them to actually progress and learn and do better, because everybody wanted to do a good job. Everybody wanted to be better. And I tell you, the rallying cry of the team around, oh, thank God, we've got it. Customers, they are our customers. We want to serve customers. So then we mobilized into this whole servant leadership formation. And we are here to serve our customers, and we are here to support each other, which then is why we moved into our whole agile innovation platform that says we rally around each other to solve problems, and nobody can solve a problem by themselves. And so that means we have to be collaborative, and we have to work as a team. So teams solve problems, not individuals solve problems. And by the way, and I don't think I only speak for Tenet, but a lot of companies in healthcare, they're very silo-oriented. We were extremely siloed, which was why integration was so important to us. We were siloed by business. We were siloed by function. We were siloed by floors. I mean, we have had a lot of separations. IT was very siloed. So being able to collapse those silos and create this horizontal workflow joint ownership of problem solving was, you know, heavy lifting, a lot of trial and error. But I can tell you, I think for the most part, outside of there were long days and it's a lot of hard work, I think people were pretty excited about getting to be part of a team, and a team that was winning, and a team that was deemed important. I think that's kind of what, you know, got people to be in a place where they felt good, they felt confident about what they were doing, and they felt valuable and valued because they could actually see the fruits of their labor.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what most anybody would ask for.
Exactly. You alluded at the outset of your answer to your past, and it's quite an interesting past for a chief information officer. So many of them grow up within the IT function and just accrue additional responsibility until they're in the big chair.
Yeah.
This is your first experience as a CIO. You worked for a number of leading technology firms, from EDS to HP to Dell to ServiceNow. You were a consultant for a year under your own shingle.
Yeah.
You helped set up a services business through ServiceNow called ProV International. Mm-hmm. I wonder how those set of experiences, the very non-traditional sets of experiences, on the one hand of having a tremendous amount of time spent on the other side of the table in companies that assist and work with your current role and your peer roles as chief information officer, but also then having a bit of an entrepreneurial bent to yourself as well, and also having a revenue orientation that a lot of CIOs don't have. I wonder if you could reflect a little bit about how that background has colored the way you see the role of CIO.
Yeah, and you're right. It was an amazing departure from my past.
Yeah.
And not one I actually thought I'd ever take, which is interesting. I thought my entire career has been spent serving CIOs, and which I loved. And I thought I got kind of good at it. So I never in a million years thought I'd sit on the other side of the table. And I will absolutely say this, it is a heck of a lot of fun. And it's fun in a lot of ways. And I honestly think, And I'll talk about the tenant and the healthcare aspect of it in a second. But I think because of my past, it makes me a very humble, but very knowledgeable CIO. And I think that's important. So I don't take anything in our area, anything that we do for granted. I understand almost as an aspect of end to end. So where things begin, where things end, and how they loop around, because I've had that past experience. And I think that it actually catapulted us into true stakeholder management, thinking about us as a business and not a cost center, and making sure that I have the aptitude to help people understand how integral we are to the company, and what we do to enable. And I think all of that past is what has helped do this today for us. So I think it's very relevant. I think the other thing that's important is I'm a technologist. So by trade, I am a technologist. And I think I'm not clinical. So I was actually very worried coming into Tenet Healthcare, which is a massive company, serving providers, clinicians. I mean, what do I have to offer that they could actually want? And it is being technical. It is having a technology and a customer service background. And I think that's helped a lot. I'm uber passionate pretty much about everything that I do. I run at hyperspeed. I'm not really... I think that's going to be a problem one day. I don't think would even know how to retire. But I can tell you that, I think the whole innovation, entrepreneurial parts of my background working in a Silicon Valley company all of those things have taught me so much about how to move fast, embrace, adopt, and fail quickly. Rally teams around thought leadership, have an active mind around development, and partner well. I'll emphasize the partner well part. I really think we could have done a better job in partnerships in the past. And I think partnerships are really important, to all companies, and especially in healthcare companies. If you yourself can't move as quickly as your constituents and stakeholders need you to move, there are plenty of companies out there that will move quickly. Your ability to size them up, bring them in, manage them, measure them, and keep going is critically important to success. If you look at, especially in the security space in healthcare, it has changed so considerably. And if we don't move quickly to embrace that change, it will be perilous. We'll be so far behind. And so that's that whole speed and agility, that is not to go on. And that's why I believe that whole entrepreneurial background helps a lot. And I don't get tired.
I'm getting that sense. So I wanted to also ask you about trends that are rising in importance from your perspective, things that are beginning to make their way onto your roadmap as you think, let's say, a couple years out.
So I'll hone in on two pretty critical things. Artificial intelligence, which is, I mean, that is healthcare. Mm-hmm. And we all see the articles and the amount of play that robotics has inside of a hospital, and how that lends itself to efficiency. So we are developing our ability to drive artificial intelligence. And I'm sorry, I keep repeating myself on security. Within security is a big play for us. And a lot of it, which I think some people may feel it's elementary, but it is so critical to a physician, so critical to the workflows within a hospital. The ability for us to give access and or onboard a physician, a nurse, a resident quickly and get them working is absolutely a critical path item. Our ability to do that through human beings is not sustainable. So using robotics embedded into programming and using an amount of artificial intelligence to almost deliver a self-service capability to physicians is exactly what we have to do. While protecting the data that we have and making sure that it's the right physician doing the right things, accessing the right information for the right purpose. So all of that comes together, but that's huge for us. And I work for a technologist. So our CEO has a technology background and he pushes the envelope with us all the time. The second thing is because of the service lines that we run and operate, especially in our acute care facilities, data and analytics is critical. And I think if you kind of explore the world of data and analytics and how you actually take take data and then manipulate it to tell you what to go do, that's where we actually are doing a considerable amount of work. And it's not only the information that we have, and we are information rich. We have more data that we can do stuff with that make us better and help us serve patients better. But then it completely changes the experience of a patient. Because as a patient, to go to a hospital, it's complicated. And there's a lot of stuff that happens in the background that if you actually leverage technology, all of that uncomplicates the experience of a patient. So we want to make sure that we're investing in those two areas that help our providers deliver better patient care and then ultimately give the patient a better experience. So when they actually go to a hospital, for the reasons why one goes to a hospital, they're not labored with paperwork and questions that they don't have answers for and time gaps in getting the care that they need and a plethora of people who continue to ask them who they are and why they're there. So those are all the things that we're using technology to go solve. For those reasons. So I absolutely see a foray into that. There's some other really cool stuff out there. I've seen it all and some of it is super cool. But you always have to remember, are we investing in technology for the right reasons? Start with what our predominant mission is and make sure that we're targeting, those outcomes for the right reasons.
I also wanted to, in closing, ask you about the state of the union of women in IT. You are part of a growing sorority of chief information officers at Fortune 500 organizations. Still not representative of the overall population of women in the U.S., for example, but certainly progress has been made. Curious about your own perspectives on that and sort of how you've thought to the extent to which you do pay forward some of the things that have led to your advancement and your growth as a leader.
So even if I'm honest with you, something like this I think is really important. Mm-hmm. So being visible and being vocal in and of itself, role models that it is possible. You know, I've never, it's funny, I used to say this in some previous worlds when I would hold female only, if you will, forums where up-and-coming leaders within organizations, and we would run all sorts of forums in order to help other women in technology feel valued, but also be prepared, you know, for how they can actually navigate their careers going forward. And I would say, you know, the funny thing is when I get up in the morning and I think about work, which I do pretty much all the time, I actually don't think about myself as a woman in IT. It just, it doesn't cross my mind. Now, occasionally, I'll be honest with you, I walk into a conference or into a room somewhere and I'm like, wow, the ratio seems a little weird.
A lot of fellas.
Yeah. And so I think I've gotten, because I've always been in technology, I've gotten used to it. Interestingly enough, with healthcare, lots of females, especially in healthcare, which I love. So when I go out to the hospitals, we have chief strategy officers, chief operating officers, chief executive officers, and I mean, lots of women that are in healthcare, which just does my heart proud. But I will say one critical thing in all of these forums is no matter who you are, having advocacy, having coaching, having a coach, and maybe it's multiple coaches for different reasons, having mentorship, and actually being part of a company who values those capabilities and actually values those roles, and then values being able to take women and move them into, along their career. I was going to say moves them up, but I don't want anybody to confuse moving up is a sign of success. Just actually having career mobility is pretty critical. But I really think that it takes strong advocacy and strong coaching and mentoring in the right programs to be a part of. I'll tell you, on our goals and objectives with my leadership team, and oh, good gracious, I think 50% of my leadership team, if not more, is female. I don't look at people and say, oh, you're a man, you're a woman. But be that as it may, everybody's got an objective to be out in the industry. So our CISO, female, be out in the industry. You get measured on that. And then make sure that you are a coach or a mentor for somebody else. And our CISO became a CISO because she was coached and mentored. So I truly, truly believe in that. And I believe in advocacy.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, Paola Arbor, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today about your remarkable and unusual pathway to CIO, the many things you've accomplished in your first year. We'll look forward to remaining abreast of the progress from this point forward as well. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Chris Young, the Chief Executive Officer of McAfee.